Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dived, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat ready to roll for this Wednesday, February the 14th of 2018. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish Football Insider. For the South Bend Tribune, I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Hope you're having a great day. We thank you for joining us here on WSBT Radio. Opening segment of this hour, we're going to focus on the Notre Dame football secondary. You'll hear from one of the new guys in charge of the safeties and the defensive backs. That is Terry Joseph, hired by Brian Kelly recently. Also coming up at the bottom of this hour, an IndyInsider.com chat recap. Eric talked Irish football with fans across the country and the world earlier today at IndyInsider.com, and we picked out some of the questions. My five question of the day. Kind of a fun question, because Eric could go a lot of different directions with this. Unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, former Notre Dame head coach Bob Davies made some headlines recently, suspended 30 days by the University of New Mexico Board of Regents due to alleged misconduct in his program. So we're just going to turn back the clock, and Eric is going to list his five, quote, unquote, favorite things about covering Bob Davie at the University of Notre Dame. So that's coming up before the end of this hour. And then next hour, when Sean jumps on board, we're going to talk a little Major League Baseball and try to find homes for several high-end Major League Baseball free agents as camps open. There are a lot of big-time names still on the open market, like Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, J.D. Martinez, and Jake Arrieta. So we are going to find homes for those players. We'll have a Notre Dame hockey interview in about an hour and a half with sophomore forward Cam Morrison, who scored against Ohio State last weekend. And we'll wrap up next hour with Rapid Fire. Kind of a tough news day today with another school shooting, this time down in Parkland, Florida. I know the person allegedly involved in the shooting is in custody, and we're hearing about fatalities and injuries. So another really, really rough day news-wise as the folks down in Parkland, Florida, dealing with an awful tragedy. I know a member of the Notre Dame hockey team, Andrew Peake, is from Parkland, Florida, and actually one of the old WSBT reporters from probably, gosh, 12 or 13 years ago, Vanessa Medina, she's actually on the scene. I saw her pop up on some of the feeds earlier today, local coverage down in that part of the country. So our thoughts and prayers are with all the folks down there dealing with that horrible tragedy. Well, we'll talk sports. That's what we're brought here to do, and it's 9 minutes after the top of the hour. Eric and Darren with you. And if you have a question or comment, feel free to jump on board, 574-282-2696. That's 574-282-2696. Thanks for joining us on 96.1 FM, WSBT, WSBTRadio.com. The stream is always available. Tune in radio, so many ways to catch up with us here on 96.1 FM, WSBT. And again, in just a second, we're going to play back an interview that Eric and I had the chance to do about a week ago with Terry Joseph, the new Notre Dame safeties coach. He'll be working, I guess, with Tide Light, you could say, with the defensive backs at the University of Notre Dame. And it's a very intriguing secondary coming back for the Fighting Irish this year. Is there a chance, Eric, that the success of the secondary could mean some possible, I don't want to say different assignments for the front seven, but the way that you can use the front seven?
I think so. I think you had good enough corners, especially at the end of the year last year, that if you had a typical group at safeties, just even an average group at safety, you would been able to be a little bit more aggressive with your front seven in terms of pressures and blitzes and stunts and so forth. And I'm not downgrading Notre Dame safeties. I feel like Jalen Elliott and Nick Coleman played to their maximum. You know, you had Nick Coleman, who was moving over from cornerback, hadn't seen a lot of action at cornerback, and played well enough in the offseason to become a starting safety. And Jalen Elliott, a high school quarterback, who I know that they had high hopes for as a safety, but still brought a lot of inexperience to the position. And so what happened was you played very conservatively with your safeties so that they wouldn't make mistakes, because you had two new guys that were kind of learning together. And it was scary because your safeties are your last line of defense. So you have to be, you can't do as much with your pressures, because then you leave an open lane for somebody to run through. And if that happens and your safety isn't in the right spot, that's a touchdown. Those mistakes are touchdowns. So if you have a group that you have more trust in, which I think Notre Dame will this year with a combination of the guys that played it last year for you and some new blood, I think your front seven can be much more effective.
Aloy Gilman, I know looking at your IndyInsider.com depth chart, you have him penciled in as the starter at free safety this year. Before I get some thoughts on that from you, on National Signing Day, I had the chance to speak with new defensive coordinator Clark Lee, and here is what he had to say about being around Alohi Gilman last season. And Alohi, of course, was unable to play after transferring from Navy, but was a member of the scout team, and we had heard that he had to be removed from the scout team a couple of times because he was just too good. You don't want to be too good and hurt the offense. So here's what Clark Lee had to say about Alohi Gilman.
I heard that from the offensive coaches, and you love that because it would be easy for him to see this year as a year where he's just taking off, biding his time, and he didn't. You know, he poured in. I mean, that guy was on our sideline in street clothes all year, you know, he is unique. He is, his leadership qualities from two standpoints. One, he's been trained as a leader, and I talked to him about this the other day. I mean, you know, his experience at Navy is formative. I mean, he was trained as a leader at the highest level, and that's going to make him unique in this setting, and he's prepared for it. But beyond that, his ability to relate with his teammates, I mean, I've never seen a guy that's so infectious in a positive way. I mean, just charismatic. The guys like him. In a short amount of time, he made really close friends and tight relationships. And so that is breeding grounds for a dynamic leader, you know. And I think in his mind, he's got to go out and perform, but he has the confidence to do that. And so I'm anxious to see him grow and develop in that leadership role and hopefully add another dynamic player in the middle of our defense.
Awfully high praise from Clark Lee talking about the makeup of safety Alohi Gilman. Again, you have him penciled in as the free safety starter for the Fighting Irish this fall. How do you imagine Alohi Gilman affecting this Fighting Irish defense?
Where
to begin?
Yeah, well, I think you're going to just see so much more production from that position, both in terms of run fits, being a really strong guy in the running game, and that he can make open field tackles. We saw that in the Notre Dame game when he was a freshman playing for Navy, and he made 12 tackles in that game. And also a guy that tracks the ball really well and is lined up in the right position and understands the big picture of the defense. So he's going to get other people in the right places in the back end of the defense. And so I really like that. I'm not sure if he'll end up at free safety. I think he can play strong safety too. Mm-hmm. I think some of it is just what Terry Joseph and Clark Lee decide that they want in their safeties and who kind of emerges. But my thought is right now I have Jordan Jenmark Heath as the second string strong safety. I eventually think he is going to be the first string strong safety by the end of spring or in the summer. And that would keep Alohi at the free safety spot. But I just think, I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm not trying to say this because they're from the same part of Oahu, but I think you see Alohi Gilman is Manti Te'o in a safety's body with safety speed. And I think there are a lot of similarities there.
That's a very interesting comment. As you kind of pivoted toward the strong safety spot, do you feel like that position is up for grabs? Does Jalen Elliott have the advantage coming into spring? But how strongly is that advantage?
Yeah, I think Jalen Elliott did what he was asked to do, which was, you know, at times he was up in the box and he was playing the run, and at times he was asked to get in coverage and help. And I think it was a tough learning experience, but I think he's a really good athlete. And if there's somebody that's going to has a chance to kind of make a quantum leap in their learning, he's that guy. But I kind of expect Jordan Jenmar Keith to zoom past him. And I don't think Nick Coleman will be a starter either. You know, that's, you know, Notre Dame and the rest of college football have been playing by the two platoon rules, where you don't play both ways. You've been, you know, they've been playing two platoon football since 1964. Last year was the first time Notre Dame didn't have a single interception from its safety core. You know, with Alohi, I'm going to jump back to him a little bit, because I think there's some members of our media, I don't think we're all unanimous in thinking that Alohi is going to make a splash. I think some people think that maybe his skills are being overstated. I'm not one of them. I could be proven wrong. I think he's going to make a big impact.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. 17 minutes after the top of the hour. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We'll go through the ndinsider.com chat recap in our next segment here on WSBT Radio. The cornerback position, very exciting. Julian Love had a tremendous season. Troy Pride Jr. overtook Nick Watkins at the other corner spot as the season went on. Here's where the defense could really change, because when you've got cover skills like these two, all of a sudden, if you can put those two on the outside, man on man, and you can trust them, then that opens up the vault for Clark Lee what to do up front.
It sure does, and they're going to be that much better. I thought that Julian played at an All-America level last year, and maybe not first-team All-America. I voted him second-team, but I thought he was one of the best four corners in the country. Sometimes stats bear that out. Sometimes they don't, but in Julian's case, they certainly did, with all the pass breakups, with interceptions for touchdowns. And the few times that he was asked to play a little bit of safety, he was dynamic at that position. He was Notre Dame's best cornerback and its best safety last year. But you think about four guys that you can really put on the field and trust, with Love, Crawford, Pride, and Watkins. And then Dante Vaughn is a head scratcher, because he looked so promising as a freshman, had some injury issues, and then just couldn't catch up as a sophomore, and now you have these five freshmen, and I include Houston Griffith in that group, that are going to be starting to push for roles. So you kind of wonder where that leaves Dante Vaughn. Does he move to safety? Does he surprise people and start climbing the depth chart again? Do those freshmen catch him? So he's kind of an intriguing guy this spring.
Eric, before injuries and during injuries in his career, a lot of high praise for Sean Crawford, considered the best corner on the team during that time period. The injuries have slowed him down, plus we've had guys within the program excel at that position. He was more of a nickel guy this year, and with some of the young guys coming and even some veteran guys on the roster, is he battling for playing time, do you feel like, right now in this defense?
I think as long as there's not somebody that can play nickel better than him, he will continue to have at least that role. I wouldn't sell him short. We saw a burst of really good play from him in September, where he was causing turnovers and he was really good in coverage. I think the only thing holding Sean Crawford back would be something physical, because mentally, you know, if you're trying to pick five mentally toughest people on the team, I would put Crawford in that category. And I also think, again, very cerebral guy. I would be shocked if he weren't a coach someday, if that's what he wants to do. He probably wants to do something else, like be my boss. But but I think he would be good at all that. But that's the whole only thing. Is he physically compromised, or did it just take a year for him to get the speed back? because he was a track guy in high school, an elite track guy, and he had that elite speed. So that player still inside of him. It's just are those legs and knees going to cooperate with yeah. what's inside of him? Because again, tremendous, tremendous player.
Let's allow you to hear from one of the new members of the Irish coaching staff, Terry Joseph. He's going to be in charge of the safeties, defensive back coach, and he came to the Fighting Irish from the University of North Carolina, where he spent a year. And this is the coach we talked about recently that spent some time in the Chicago Cubs organization, played in the Midwest League, played here in South Bend at what is now Four Winds Field. Back then it was Kovaleski Stadium. So let's allow you to hear from one of the newest members of the coaching staff, Terry Joseph.
Terry, let's just start with what caught your attention about joining this Notre Dame staff?
You know, I think a chance to compete and recruit on a national level every week. And then, you know, obviously if you take care of your business, you got a chance to win championships. And obviously, I mean national championships. And then, you know, the culture that Coach Kelly's built here, just an opportunity for me as a coach to be a part of it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Coach, I mean, you got jumped right into recruiting before they even announced you and so forth, and you have to know a lot about Notre Dame. I mean, did you know a lot? Did you just, you know, cram and study and so forth? Because you look at the people that were pulled in here, including Boykin here at the end, obviously you had something to do with that.
Yeah, you know, first of all, they gave me some resources that I could study on the planes and as we were traveling. But I think the big thing is that I was always with Clark or Ty Light. So that really helped me as far as if somebody asked me a really informational question about our program. But at the same time, I had some relationships with those guys going forward from the other places that I was at, so I was able to kind of parlay off of those and put ourselves in position to close, and today was a good day for us.
Coach Kelly mentioned that Boykin has a chance to be great. What do you see out of him early on as this high school football player making the transition to Notre Dame?
Well, you know, the way football has changed, everybody has to stack the box to stop the run. And so you got to put some guys out there to play some man-to-man. And now you get a guy out there who's long, long arms, knows how to play the ball, wants to compete. So you can put that guy out there and you can feel good about the jump ball. Sometimes you get a guy out there and he can be in great position, but if he's 5'9", with these big receivers, a la the LSU-Notre Dame bowl game, you can lose those things even though you're in pretty good position.
I got a recruiting question, but before I do that, I love Stewart on your team this year. I thought he was outstanding. From Notre Dame signed a kid named Albert Pori out of Louisiana in 1999. They didn't sign another Louisiana kid until 2015, Jerry Tillery. Now, they've gotten a couple to each of these last 2 years. Wondering if you're going to be involved in recruiting that state. It would seem natural. Mm-hmm. And what kind of talent is in Louisiana?
You know, obviously, I have a lot of love for Louisiana. And, yes, you know, I'll be involved in recruiting that state. And I think that's going to be, per capita, one of the most talented states around. I think having somebody who's familiar with it, you can kind of pick your spots and know where the honey hole's at and where you got a guy who's going to be a Notre Dame fit. But the last three guys that they've gotten out of the state, all pretty good gets. And I think at the end of the day, if you can identify them early, find the fit, and develop the relationship, and then the most important thing, make sure you eat mom's cooking when you go in a home visit, you got a chance to get them.
You have to keep them away from the purple, too. Your baseball career is interesting. I got an email from a guy named Dave Tremble. Who said he coached you at single A and double A. Mm-hmm. When you got through with baseball and decided, I'm going to do something else, why football coaching rather than baseball coaching at that point?
So when I finished playing, Coach Hank, my high school coach, he called me and he had a spot teaching business classes, which I had graduated in, coaching both sports. And, you know, as you start coaching football and baseball at the high school level, if you had a great pitcher in high school, you won. If you didn't, you lost. But in football, it was really more the schematics of it, figuring out how to put the guys in position to have success. And that's what the part that I really fell in love with. And that kind of brought me to the football side.
I actually call the South Bend Cubs games here in town, so I'm kind of curious to know how your baseball experience has helped you as a football coach.
First of all, it kind of makes me help the players through tough situations. You know, I always tell the guys play one play at a time, because in the minor leagues, I was literally playing one at bat at a time. And so that's really helped me. And then also, when you play in the minor leagues, it's almost like professional golf. You're on an island by yourself. And so it's the same thing in the secondary, that, hey, you have to do your job to have success. And then, I think always tracking the ball, because, it's no different in baseball than it is on a deep ball in football. So those things have all, helped me out.
When you were at single A with the Cubs, did you play here in South Bend?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the experience? You remember coming here or anything?
Well, the Midwest League was the coldest league I ever played in, so that's what I do remember. But believe it or not, it was the Midwest League was my best statistical year, and if they took out the first month and a half of the season, it would have been really off the charts, because I probably hit about 220 until the weather broke.
I wanted to talk to you about some of the guys that signed today or signed in December, but one guy I wanted to ask you about was Alohi Gilman, who transferred from Navy, tried to get eligibility last year, got turned down for that. Have you had a chance to study him much? What are your impressions of him?
When you watch him, he's a guy who has that uncanny ability to make plays. Very productive, but the most impressive thing to me about him is that when I see him in the weight room, I see him at lunch or at breakfast, the guy's personality says nothing but leadership. Guys flock around him, so I'm excited to help continue to mold him to be a great player for our program. But, he's already a great kid, so I just want to help him get to that next level.
When you're evaluating the safeties and deciding, do you want this to be an open book, an open competition for everybody, blank slate for the guys that played last year?
Yeah, there's no doubt, because anytime you bring in a new coach, everybody wants to pick up a little bit more momentum. And like I told the guys, at the end of the day, the best two guys are going to go out there and play. And then if I feel like we can have a rotation and not a big drop-off, it'll be the best three guys. And then if we can get four, that'll be even better. But at the end of the day, they're going to get the tools that they need to go out and have success. And now it's going to be up to those guys to go out on the field and put that success on film over a long period of time, because we want consistent guys. And the one thing I told them is, I want Derek Jeter at safety. I want the guy who makes the play he's supposed to make over and over and over again.
There was some talk about, Bracy can play running back and Wilkins can play wide receiver. Is there any chance you'll lose any of those guys to the offense, or are you saying, hey, I'm new, I'm holding on to these guys, don't take anybody away from me?
Well, I think the trading and the free agent period, that's above my pay grade. So you have to talk to the higher-ups on that one.
With Derek Allen, how college-ready do you think he is? How ready as a contributor do you feel like he can be?
From his physical numbers, he's knocking on the door if he's not already ready. When you watch the tape, he has such a great skill set. I think the big thing is going to be, how quick can he pick it up? And there's been nothing that has told any of us that he can't. So coming in, he's going to have every opportunity to be out there September 1st for us, and we're excited about his future here.
Paul Mawala is a kid that didn't get a lot of star love. What are people overlooking about him?
I just think when I watched his camp film, I like him. You're looking at a guy who plays like a chip on it, with his chip on his shoulder, because of what you said. And he's been overlooked probably most of his career, and now he has an opportunity to play with that chip in front of a national audience. So I'm excited about just seeing him work and seeing what he can achieve, because just watching him play, he believes that he should be standing here at Notre Dame playing with these guys.
Of all these guys, Houston's on campus for you, and it sounds like he's going to get his first look at boundary corner. What are your thoughts about his evolution as a player? Would you like him to stay at corner? Are you open to him moving to safety?
Yeah, you know, obviously he was a corner in high school, and he's going to play corner here. And so his success out there determined if we need to move him back in. For me, the more great players we have in the secondary, the better the competition's going to be, and the better we'll be as a group. So no matter what position he plays, I think at the end of the day, we want to get the best four or five guys out there at the same time.
All right, very good. Terry, thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That is new Notre Dame safeties coach Terry Joseph, a recent conversation with Eric and I over at the University of Notre Dame. A lot of interesting pieces on the back end of the Irish defense in 2018. 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Next, a recap of some of the questions that Eric took today in his IndyInsider.com chat. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Take 25 minutes in front of the top of the hour, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, brought to you by Budweiser. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on this Wednesday evening. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be talking Notre Dame football recruiting with Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. Also tomorrow, another installment in our series of looking at the Chicago Cubs minor league system with Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den. He's going to focus on the catching and first base positions in the Cubs minor league system tomorrow night at 6:30 here on WSBT Radio. Right now, it's our IndyInsider.com chat recap. Eric, out of the blue, just decided to have a chat earlier today at IndyInsider.com. And he took questions from Irish fans all across the world. So let's go ahead and grab a few of the questions, and we'll see if the type version is similar to the verbal version. And Eric, we'll start with a question that came in from Dallas. James says, I saw where an NFL scout has given Equanimeous St. Brown very high marks, impressed with his ability to separate. He said that EQ runs good routes, but the ball placement was terrible throughout his film. What do you do with a quarterback who scores 30 touchdowns, makes all the right reads, but cannot throw an 18-yard pass accurately?
Well, I think the first thing you do is don't give up on him, that there's something there to work with. There's also a history of a guy that's improved quite a bit. And then this spring, you really have to find out what you have. You know, we've talked about this on the show that a lot of Brandon's initial problems had to do with his field vision. And then layered on top of that, I think toward the end of the season, was some confidence issues and anxiety issues. And so I think those are fixable, but you got to see how far you can fix those in the spring. But until there's somebody better, Darren, yeah, he's your number one quarterback. You don't say, well, you know, we better invest in somebody else here because this is as good as he's going to get. You know, we've talked about, you know, the other day on the show, there were four quarterbacks that were in the top 10 this year that improved 45 spots or better, mm-hmm, and two that improved 100 spots or better. So you just have to kind of, I think by the end of the spring, we'll have a much better sense. Now, the bright lights won't be on yet, but in terms of fundamental things, we're either going to see a difference in Wimbush or we're not. The other thing I'd say about Equanimeous, if he had consistently fought for the ball,
yeah,
like Miles Boykin did in the Citrus Bowl, his numbers would have been better.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Boykin did something that we didn't see very often this year.
Right.
He's in that game.
Get out of my way.
And he took it to the house.
Yeah.
Next up in our chat, Sean from Chicago writes, ESPN just released their first FPI rankings for 2018, and it's their football power index. Notre Dame checks in at number 5 of the country. Does this mean anything to you, and does Notre Dame have the potential to live up to this particular ranking?
I don't think there's a matter of having to live up to it. I think most of the players and the coaches don't even know what an FPI is. And to be honest, I happened to peek at that before he asked me the question, because I saw it on Twitter, and I thought it was interesting that they were number 5. you know, I don't expect them to have that kind of ranking from the polls, the preseason polls. I think they're going to be in the teens or low 20s unless there's just some revelation about the quarterback position in the offense where everything's falling into place and you can bank on it that that's going to continue against Michigan in the opener. But, you know, I understand that it's an analytical tool. I don't think you'd completely dismiss it, but it's something that doesn't really affect me one way or another.
Daniel from Kalamazoo, Michigan asked you today. He thought that Dante Vaughn looked like a promising talent his freshman year. It appears with the emergence of Pride and Watkins, he may not see a lot of action this upcoming season. Do you believe Vaughn could be a candidate to transfer? Do you believe he will stick around and compete for playing time? I know you just talked about him a couple of moments ago.
Right. I think, you know, when you're looking at that number, which is 89 scholarships that gets down to 85, you know, I don't ever want to out and out predict a player is going to transfer. I think sometimes I look at positions and say, who's not playing? Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at the cornerback position with suddenly five new faces and you have four guys that have kind of established themselves and then you have one guy that's kind of in the middle of that group, I think you could speculate, you know, that's one of the places where your eye takes you, where you start to think, but Dante Vaughn could, that's what spring's about. I mean, Dante Vaughn could kind of turn this thing on his ear. He's a very talented kid. And so we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think it's a fair question. I'm trying to be fair in my answer without predicting somebody.
Mm-hmm. Bill asked today, do you expect to see a big jump from Dalen Hayes this year? I know 2017 was his first healthy year. Seems he may be ready for a big season. Talking about the average defensive end.
I would be really surprised if he doesn't have a big jump in production. And we did see a significant jump from freshman to sophomore year. He tailed off a little bit in November, but you're talking about a guy that played less than 10 high school games. And that, but there's just too much talent there, Darren, too much intelligence, too much leadership, too much investment for him not to be a significant part of this defense. I think we're going to be looking at Dalen Hayes next year like we looked at Tavon Coney this year.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Sign me up. Speaking of Mr. Coney, your guy Greg from Oakland asked Brian, or who was the most important player to come back for next season, Drew Tranquil or Tavon Coney?
Well, in a lot of this, you're basing it on who would be the replacement, and I think they're both very valuable. As was Jerry Tillery coming back, but I think Tavon Coney is the guy. He's in the middle of your defense. He's the guy that's making a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. But this is nothing, not to minimize anything Tranquil did. I just think Coney at the end of the year was their best front seven player, and Julian Love was their best defensive player overall.
Going through some of the questions from Eric's Notre Dame football chat at ndinsider.com. The chat was today at noon at ndinsider.com. Jason from Orlando, what is the thought process of moving Drew Tranquil to linebacker? It seems like the Rover position was custom made for him. And you know what? There is some truth to that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, and I think it's a great question. And I expected a different answer when I asked Brian Kelly about this in our WSBT interview with him on signing day. He said it really was Tranquil's skill set and Tranquil's evolution that prompted the move. Now, he also wanted to put Drew in a position where he would be more of a draftable prospect. And moving from Rover to an inside linebacker position gets a chance for him to have more teams' interest. There are teams that use the Rover concept in the NFL, but they're not 32 teams that do that. And so I think those two things factored in the most. What I thought was going to be the number one factor was, and I still think it was a factor, was I think the collection of Rovers that can move into starting spot were much more advanced than the collection of linebackers that can move into the spot. I think Shane Simon, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, or Asmar Bilal, I think you've got three really strong Rover starting candidates there. to pair with Coney, who's the next linebacker? Jameer Jones, Jonathan Jones, one of the early enroll freshmen. Do you see what I'm saying? Those guys may be really good players in time, but they're not at the level, I think, of the Rovers. And so I think that's a much better fit.
I know what the answer is to this question, but I think it was a good question to ask anyway. Melissa from South Bend, will the NCAA's ruling stop Notre Dame from reporting infractions?
Yeah, I don't think that they will stop them from Notre Dame.
They are who they are.
Yeah, they are who they are, and they did things the right way, and they knew that they had an alternative where they kind of just flushed this down the toilet and expelled those players without giving them their day in court, and they did the right thing by giving those guys a chance to prove their innocence, and one of them did exonerate himself and Iler Hardy. So you would have changed the whole trajectory of Iler Hardy's career. And honestly, you gave Kavari Russell a chance to come back to Notre Dame and get his degree. And you gave Ishaq Williams the same chance, even though he couldn't play football. So I think Notre Dame did the absolutely right thing. And other than one real weird outlier on Twitter yesterday, I'd say 99.9% of the people inside and outside of Notre Dame would agree with that.
Another question from Roger. How do you feel about the options on the offensive line? How much of a step back do you expect given the players and the coach that they lost? Harry Hiestand left for the Bears, and of course, Quentin Nelson's going to be probably a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, and Mike McGlinchey is trending toward a first-round pick in this year's NFL draft.
Yeah, Monday morning quarterback, which is
Peter King.
Peter King, and a site that I really respect, had Quentin Nelson as the number two prospect in the draft, ahead of all the quarterbacks, Darren, and then Mike McGlinchey at 21. And that production and that experience is just really difficult to replace. However, you know, they do have four guys with starting experience, and I think there's a lot of good material even behind the potential starters. And then you think about the culture that Harry Hiestand left behind, and I think Jeff Quinn is going to continue that and continue a lot of the good things. They're not going to be the best offensive line in the country next year, but I think they could be an above average offensive line with the ceiling of maybe being a much better than average offensive line. It's probably not going to happen for them in September, but I think once they get rolling on October, you're going to start to see them play pretty well.
In order for the running game to roll, you need that good offensive line play, but you need someone to hand the football off to. And Skyler wants to know, Eric, when you take a look at in-house options to switch to running back, who comes to mind?
Well, there's several people that come to mind, but you have to look at the logic. You're basically moving a player to be no higher than your third-string running back and possibly fourth or fifth. So if you're going to move somebody like Nick Coleman, does it make sense to move a guy that was a starting safety and would probably still be number two to be your fourth-string running back? So I think Tariq Bracey makes the most sense. He was a dynamic running back in high school, and you don't really need him as a cornerback this year. You will in the future, and I think he's going to be a really good one. But you could put him over at running back and be a guy that's a just-in-case. You could even redshirt him, but still have him practicing and have him ready to go, and then move him back to cornerback when you lose Nick Watkins and maybe even Julian Love to the NFL draft next year. So that one makes the most sense. There's some other ones. I mean, some of the freshman wide receivers could do it, but to me, Tariq Bracey makes the most sense.
Finally, we'll go to Maine. Mike had a question for you. Getting back to the 89 scholarships, I don't recall another year when Notre Dame was in this position after signing day and the fifth years, and early departures for the draft were resolved. Am I right about that? And what do they do if the first day of classes arrive and four student athletes have not jumped ship?
Yeah, Mike.
Which never happens.
Yeah, but Mike has a short memory, because it's like this every year. Mm-hmm. Where I would say it's a little bit different is I think the number is higher at 89. You know, they're a little bit usually closer to 85. And sometimes the fifth-year senior thing hasn't played itself out all the way. And I think Notre Dame has locked into the 5th years that they're going to keep, and the 5th years that they're going to say you can go ahead and find another place to play, or you can move on with your life. So I still think you're going to have attrition through a medical hardship, through transfers. Guys go through spring and say, wow, am I really 4th string on the depth chart with no hope of moving up? You're going to have some guys, but if it were to happen, you know, if they got one more scholarship they have to shave at the beginning, I mean, I'd hate to see this, but Chris Fink may have to go back to walk-on status for a year because those are renewable. Mm-hmm. You know, that was only a commitment made for a year, and he's got 2 years out of it. I just think it always works itself out. I think it'll work itself out.
Hadn't thought about that option.
Yeah.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, taking questions today in his chat at ndinsider.com. And there will be, I'm sure, the ability for folks to read some of these questions and answers in the South Bend Tribune.
In the print edition, yes, it'll be. We'll have the best and the worst tomorrow, and the worst are my answers, including some relationship advice that I had to give Tony from Brooklyn.
Yo, I saw that.
Yeah.
He was struggling today.
He was struggling. But you're asking me for relationship advice, you're struggling.
Well, you can read the transcript right now at IndyInsider.com. We're going to have some fun with the My 5 question of the day today. Eric's 5, and this is in parentheses, favorite things about covering Bob Davey at Notre Dame. I can't wait to see this list. Sports Beat continues next on 96.1 FM WSBT. Hey.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
The University of New Mexico Board of Regents voted Tuesday to deny football coach Bob Davey's appeal of a 30-day suspension, which was the result of a university investigation into alleged misconduct within his program. Well, you don't want to see any coach brought up in the headlines for something like that. But since he's in the headlines, we decided to turn back the clock today. Eric's 5, in parentheses, favorite things about covering Bob Davey at Notre Dame. It could be good or bad, so we'll see where you go with this. We'll start with number 5.
Oh, gosh. Full disclosure, you know, we didn't have the greatest relationship, so let me start there. And I want to be fair, but I also want to be informative. And number 5 on my list is Bob Davey beginning most sentences when you ask him a question with, I'm going to tell you what.
I didn't expect to get impersonations along the way. He did say that a lot. You're right. Number 4.
Number 4, I really learned. He was a coach that really illustrated to me, and again, this isn't complimentary, how important leadership is in that position. When you think about a lot of the talent Bob Davey had to work with, and also some of the great assistants, Urban Meyer, Greg Madison, Steve Adazio, Bill Sheridan, Kevin Rogers, Kirk Dahl, Jerry Rosberg, and they still didn't win at a consistent level, and all the 5-star and 4-star recruits he got. It really makes a difference who's running the show.
Eric's 5 favorite things about covering Bob Davey at Notre Dame. Number 3.
One of the strangest things that I can remember watching my career was him usurping Greg Madison as the defensive play caller. Madison was the defensive coordinator, and Bob Davey got out there, and he was calling the defensive calls, and it was very apparent on the sideline that that's what was happening, and I just felt like that was uncalled for. I think you could have done it a sneakier way if you were going to do it, but I don't think Greg Madison deserved that. And the fact that he's been a great coach since, I think kind of
tells the story.
Tells the story, right?
Number 2.
Vaughn McClure's conspiracy theories. Vaughn McClure worked with us at the South Bend Tribune, and Vaughn said that when he was in Hawaii, he was walking down the street, and Bob Davey happened to be walking down the street the other way, and Bob Davey crossed the street, then crossed it back after he passed Vaughn. And he also said that Bob Davey kicked his luggage in a hotel lobby.
just find a
so
way.
So those stories I definitely miss.
Navy.
Those interactions with Vaughn McClure, who I talked to today. He covers the Atlanta Falcons for ESPN.
And we're up to number one, your favorite thing about covering Bob Davey at Notre Dame.
Well, he's the guy that fired Joe Moore, who was maybe the best offensive line coach of his era and a lot of eras. And then the resulting age discrimination suit, which brought all kinds of interesting and ugly, unfortunately, but interesting things about Lou Holtz's relationship with Bob Davey, with the whole dynamic at Notre Dame. It was fascinating. It was a soap opera every day. That should have had the soap theme if we were on radio then.
That is today's My 5 Question of the Day from Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I will have my chat transcript in the paper tomorrow, best and worst of the questions. Anthony Anderson has a look at Notre Dame women's basketball team's big road game at Virginia. They're pretty high up in the standings. We have a Notre Dame recruiting Lawrence Keys follow from Tyler. Wrestling state advance from Steve. Cassopolis feature high school from Finn, and much, much more.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, 3 is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, 3 for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Sean Stiers is at Mishawaka High School getting set for high school basketball. Mishawaka and Wawasee tonight at 7:30 or so here on WSBT Radio. I'm Darren Pritchett from our WSBT studio. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing good now since I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, we will.
That's exactly right.
I will try to fix the problem in your ear as I talk here on the program. So sorry you're hearing some things down the line in your ear, but I'll try to fix that as we move along here on WSBT Radio. It's tough to be an engineer and a broadcaster at the same time, but I'll do my best to push buttons and try to figure out.
We're good now.
Oh, we are. Okay.
I'm hearing what I'm supposed to be hearing.
Is it 7 o'clock yet? All right. We are going to talk a little baseball coming up in this segment. Since it is Valentine's Day, we're going to try to find a match for several high-end free agents that have not found homes as of yet. Spring training camps are open. Pitchers and catchers have reported, but there's some good players still on the free agent market. In about 22 minutes, I'll be joined by Notre Dame hockey sophomore forward Cam Morrison. The Irish won the Big Ten regular season crown on Friday, and it's a home-and-home against Michigan this weekend. The home game for the Irish against the Wolverines is Friday night, and that game is sold out except for standing room only tickets. And of course, you can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. We also have Rapid Fire coming up. And again, high school basketball at 7:30, Mishawaka versus Wawasee. And I guess it's been a few days since the Cavemen have been able to take the court, right?
It has. And I was just talking to Ron Heklinski for a pregame interview, but the game that you were at last week was the last time they actually played. So it's been about a week, and they're ready to get back out there on the floor tonight.
Cavemen and Wawasee tonight at 7:30 here on WSBT Radio. I want to just sneak this in. I ran out of time last hour, but our Sports Beat question of the day today kind of also played off our My 5 question of the day. And the question on my Twitter feed at 961 Sports Beat was this: knowing what you know now, and if you had to pick one, which person would you rather have coaching your football team? You have to pick one. Your choices: Bob Davey or Tyrone Willingham. If you were to vote, Mr. Stiers, which direction would you go?
This is like Sophie's Choice in another direction here. I mean, this is tough. I did catch some of the tail end of you and Eric there the last hour and all this stuff going on with Bob Davey now. I think you can argue that just from a one-loss standpoint, Davey was a little bit better. But all this extra baggage that we know about now, even though Tyrone Willingham, there were a lot of flaws that he had, and I think it started with recruiting. I guess you would have to go with Tyrone if you had to pick one of the two.
Not an easy choice.
It's not.
I lean toward Tyrone, even though he was not great at recruiting. And, I mean, Davey's defenses, that was supposed to be his specialty. So I think you're right. When you're kind of breaking things down, the extra stuff you had to deal with Davey was very, very frustrating. And now what we know, what happened allegedly at New Mexico, I think that makes the answer Tyrone Willingham for me. But on Twitter today, it's a 50-50 draw right now, believe it or not. 50% really? Took Davey and 50% took Willingham. So that vote continues on my Twitter account at 961 SportsBeat. And if you would like to take part, you still have time. But right now it's 50-50 between Davey and Willingham. And I'm actually a little surprised, but then again, it's not the easiest of choices, to say the least.
No, and I wonder just how much, you know, people are kind of paying attention. Everyone's paying attention to what's going on at New Mexico. Like, if everyone realizes all the stuff that's going on down there right now, and so they just kind of voted maybe not having all of the information. I don't know. But that, it surprises me that it's that close.
Well, maybe again, because
it's a tough decision.
Maybe it's because Tyrone was more recent.
Yeah.
Even though they're very close together, but sometimes the farther away you get from something, the less you remember.
That's very true. Very true.
All right, so again, 961 SportsBeat is my Twitter account. Try to put up a question daily, and we're at a 50-50 draw right now with today's question on my Twitter feed. All right, let's get to a little Major League Baseball. It's Valentine's Day, so we need to match some pretty good baseball players with new teams. And I found this exercise actually kind of difficult, just considering how teams are relying on younger players so much more than in past years. And most teams don't want to go with long-term deals right now, just considering so many of these deals have blown up in the faces of players. Now the Cubs, or in teams, I should say, but the Cubs went out and gave Yu Darvish 6 years. There's a report one team offered 8 years. 8 years for a 31-year-old, yes.
No kidding.
For Yu Darvish.
Man, and he turned it down.
I don't know what the financials were. Maybe the situation wasn't as good, but wow, 8 years for a 31-year-old. 6 years makes me cringe, but the Cubs are in go mode. They're trying to win with Brian and Rizzo, and I can't blame them. So let's find new homes, or at least attempt to find new homes for these Major League Baseball free agents as we play Cupid. We'll try to make some matches here, and we'll start with a guy that actually you're pretty familiar with as a Kansas City Royal fan. It's first baseman Eric Hosmer, who is a very young free agent, and I think that's why his group are trying to get anywhere from 6, 7, 8 year deals for their first baseman.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, when you look at a lot of these guys we're going to talk about, part of the problem is they are Scott Boras clients, and they are right in that 29, 30 to 31-year-old range. That's where a lot of free agents are. Some of them, like Darvish, are over 30, but they all want these long-term deals that are going to get them under contract to being as close to 40 years old as possible. I mean, Hosmer, the two teams that have offers out on him, the biggest ones are Kansas City and San Diego. They're reportedly 7-year deals, and Kansas City's is for a little bit more money, but he's holding out. And I mean, those two parts, I think when you look at fit for Hosmer, the team with the money that would have made the most sense is the Red Sox, but they had more interest in JD Martinez, who we'll talk about in a little bit, just because of his opposite field ability in the short porch over there. But otherwise, those two teams seem to be suited for his skills, because he's not a first baseman who's going to hit 30 to 40 home runs a year. He's going to hit more doubles. He's got 206 career doubles and 127 home runs. So, I mean, I guess if you're Hosmer, and those are the two options, because the offers are apparently still out there for him, it comes down to where do you want to live. And I mean, Kansas City is a nice little area, but I mean, if I had to choose, I would pick San Diego over Kansas City. And I mean, I think because they're both in rebuild mode right now, I think San Diego, even though Kansas City obviously has just won a World Series not that long ago, San Diego is already a little bit farther in their rebuild process. But the other side of it is he could stay in Kansas City and essentially be thought of in the same vein as George Brett, because he is a big hero in Kansas City right now. So, I mean, if that's what he wants over location and everything else, I think then Kansas City makes the bigger fit. It's really just going to come down to where he wants to live, I think, because he's got 7-year deals right there. I can't see him getting any more than that, but that's what he's holding out for.
I should agree with you, because the fans went crazy when you said Kansas City. There was a huge roar behind you.
That's right. There was a Wawasee hit kind of a three-quarter, or not a three-quarter, but about a 30-foot three-pointer at the end of the first quarter. The JV.
Okay, well, I'm not a big fan of spending a lot of money on a non-premium position. I consider first base a non-premium position. Premium to me is shortstop, third base, outfield, starting pitcher.
Right.
Because I feel like you can always find someone to play first base, and it's a lot more difficult to find someone to play short and third. So just like when you asked me in a question recently in Rapid Fire about Darvish and Arrieta, I said I didn't want either one because they're both 31, and with the wear and tear on pitchers and with the way a lot of these deals turn out, I just don't want to go down that road. Now, the Cubs were in a different spot, so I get why they went after Darvish and they signed him. But I have a hard time giving Hosmer a long-term deal. He had the .385 on base percentage this year. Every other year, he has a good year. Then he has a dip the following year. It's kind of interesting. And, I mean, he's hit 25 home runs twice. That's his high watermark. So, I mean, I feel like he's a really, really good player, but I can't imagine going 7 years. Now, teams like the Padres probably have to do that compared to maybe a team that is more used to winning, bigger profile, postseasons in their future. Maybe they don't have to go as much for Hosmer, but I just don't see the fit in San Diego. They've got Will Myers there. They can move him to the outfield. To me, it comes down to Kansas City. It just seems like the right fit. He had great success there. The ballpark does fit him. So I think Kansas City is the right spot for him, and it sounds like they are willing to at least have that conversation. But I did see a report today that the Padres have re-engaged in trying to persuade Hosmer to come to San Diego. Personally, I think he's waiting for some playoff-type team to offer him something. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just go back to Kansas City where you're comfortable? Or if San Diego's really offering 7 years, I think you should take it and run. To me, it just seems like he's waiting for a big market team or someone close to the playoffs taking a chance on him. Could be wrong.
I think that's what he wants because, again, I mean, there's reportedly close to $150 million in 7 years on the table in Kansas City. So if he really wanted to stay there, I think he would have jumped on that by now.
Let's go to another Kansas City Royal that you're familiar with. Third baseman Mike Moustakas is still looking for employment after a 38 home run season.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of do a short kind of run through here. I mean, I saw where the Yankees might be interested in 1 year, but that's about it. And I mean, even before I saw that, I'm thinking, well, if the Yankees just wanted to stuff their roster and kind of go back to their old school thinking, that would be the place. But Gleyber Torres, a guy who you're familiar with, is waiting in the wings, but they don't have a major league proven third baseman right now. Baltimore is a potential spot because they keep talking about trading Manny Machado and all that, but I mean, it's just not really a good market for a guy whose only position options are first base, third base, or designated hitter, and he's plan B behind Hosmer in Kansas City. And I think in a perfect world, Kansas City would re-sign both of them, but the Alex Gordon contract really holds them back from doing that. Kansas City's priority is Hosmer and then Moustakas, so it's a tough market for him right now as far as anything, probably over 6 years.
Premium position, so I will pay for him. I worry he had his career year last year with 38 home runs. His previous high was 22 in 2015. And in the analytics world, the on-base percentage isn't great. At 314, OPS plus 100 is average. He was 116, so he was better than average. I'm going to put him in San Diego because I feel like that is a hole that they could fill. I think it makes more sense than Hosmer because, again, they got Will Myers at first. So I'm going to put Moustakas in San Diego. The problem is there aren't too many teams that need a third baseman. That's really hurting his market.
Yep, exactly.
All right, let's skip to outfielder J.D. Martinez, who played with Detroit and Arizona last year, blew up with the Diamondbacks. He has been tied to Boston for a long time, but it sounds like he and his agent are frustrated with the Red Sox, so they're trying to look elsewhere. So where is the match for J.D. Martinez?
To me, it just seems like if it's not going to work in Boston, he should just go back to Arizona. I know they would really like to keep him. Again, I think it comes down to the length of the contract. And I mean, Scott Boras is going to have to give somewhere because spring training is starting, and these guys just aren't going to get the long-term deals that they want. Arizona seems like the best fit for him. He had a great year for them, a great half a year after he was traded over there, and just had a really great year overall. And the Diamondbacks seem like a good fit. I mean, they're playoff ready. They were in the playoffs last year, and it seems like it would be a really good match for him.
I'm going to put J.D. in Boston. I just feel like he's an American League player. Defensively, he's going to become a big problem if he's going to get that long-term deal at this stage in his career. It just makes too much sense. Boston needs him. They have a spot available. And even though Arizona could really use him, he really excelled hitting behind Paul Goldschmidt last year. I just worry about him defensively. You're right. It comes down to these two teams. But because of defense, I'm going to put him toward Boston, even though, boy, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen if there is as hard feelings as it appears at this moment. We're playing Match on Valentine's Day, trying to find new homes for Major League Baseball free agents. The Chicago Cubs signed Yu Darvish. Apparently, they contacted Jake Arrieta, and if they contacted him about a six-year deal and he didn't find that interesting, I don't know what he's looking for. I don't know what he thinks is out there, and maybe he'll prove me wrong very soon. But give me your match for Jake Arrieta since he is no longer going to be a Chicago Cub.
Well, considering the Cubs up the ante by getting Darvish, I mean, Milwaukee is the one that needs him the most. But again, if he's not going to sign with Chicago for six, I don't see Milwaukee going seven or eight to try to get him. So I just don't know. There are a handful of clubs out there, and it sounds like the Phillies might be the one because they have the most money out there. And if all he's looking for is the best deal and not necessarily the best team, then maybe Philadelphia is it.
To me, the match is the Milwaukee Brewers. They need a high-end starter. They have five good starters. Chase Anderson has the ability to be a top-two starter, I think, in their rotation. They've got some good arms, but they don't have that guy they can count on to end a losing streak. I just think with Milwaukee losing out on Yu Darvish, next best option is Jake Arrieta. They don't have to trade any of their prospects to enhance their starting rotation. And if the Brewers truly want to compete in the NL Central with Chicago, I think Arrieta would be the guy that they need to add. Another starting pitcher, Alex Cobb, formerly of Tampa Bay. The Cubs flirted with him a little bit.
Yeah, and there was a time that the Cubs thought that they were going to have Alex Cobb, but it didn't quite work out that way. I mean, there are a handful of teams. You've got, like, the Brewers would be a good match, the Twins, the Dodgers, again, the Phillies, they've had some interest. I would say if the Brewers, aren't going to get Jake Arrieta, then Alex Cobb would make a lot of sense for them because they really need to upgrade the rotation if they're going to try to make a run at the Cubs in the NL Central this year.
Love your observation. I think you're exactly right. If Arrieta doesn't go to Milwaukee, it makes a lot of sense for the Brewers to talk about Cobb In my world, if Arrieta goes to Milwaukee, where does Cobb go? Philadelphia came to mind. They signed a 31-year-old Carlos Santana to help their offense, so they're willing to add a little age as they rebuild. They've got some interesting prospects coming. They've got a couple of interesting young players in their lineup right now. So to me, Cobb would be a good fit since he's 30 years old. And if not Philadelphia, the Dodgers need to replace Yu Darvish. Now let's go to former Cardinals starting pitcher Lance Lynn. Where's the match for Lance?
Well, I've seen there's some interest from the Yankees. And that, I mean, here's a guy with a 3.38 ERA in six seasons in St. Louis. And I would think that if it's not the Yankees, maybe a team like Minnesota, again, or even the Dodgers, who are looking to bolster their rotations. He's a very serviceable, you're going to know more about him than me, but he's a very serviceable starting pitcher, and he would make sense for some of those teams who think they have a chance to compete.
Yankees are my choice. I think it's a nice addition to the rotation, except for last year coming off Tommy John surgery. He keeps the ball in the ballpark. He did not last year. I'm going to call that a little flukish. He keeps the ball down to the zone. He's got a two-seamer that drops off the table that can get some ground balls. So I think that'd be the perfect final piece for the Yankees to add to the rotation in Lance Lynn. Again, not the Yankees. I think the Dodgers needing to fill that spot left behind by Yu Darvish. Finally, relief pitcher Greg Holland, formerly of the Rockies and formerly of the Royals.
Yeah, I know. And I know the Cubs love Brandon Morrow, and they say that he's their closer, but Holland would be a pretty nice insurance policy considering they lost Wade Davis, and he gave up just seven home runs, had 41 saves in Colorado, and that's where Wade Davis is going, and the seven home runs is only one more than Davis gave up with the Cubs. So if I don't think the Cubs are going to. I think it would make sense because they did have some issues with the bullpen, even with Davis last year, the depth of their bullpen, and it would make a lot of sense for a team that obviously is gearing up for a run at the World Series. But if not there, then I would say Cleveland or St. Louis would both maybe make some sense as well.
I'm going to go with the Angels. They have Blake Parker, a 32-year-old, as their penciled-in closer right now. If the Angels are going for it, and they're going for it, adding guys like Ian Kinsler to play second base, they kept Justin Upton. They brought in Zach Cozart. Ohtani, the Japanese hitter and pitcher, has joined them. If they're going to go all in with guys like Kinsler and Cozart, why not add one more piece to the bullpen and put Holland in L.A. with the Angels? So we're done matching on Valentine's Day as we try to find homes for all these guys. What a weird offseason. It is 27 minutes after the top of the hour. Sean's going to go do an interview, so Sean, we'll talk to you in a little bit.
Okay, sounds good.
He'll have rapid fire later on this hour. Coming up next, I'll be joined by Notre Dame hockey sophomore forward Cam Morrison. We'll talk about his career in this weekend's matchup with the Michigan Wolverines. That is in about 4 minutes. It is now 27 minutes after the top of the hour, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Abby, thank you very much for the forecast update. I'm Darren Pritchett. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. Irish basketball Saturday at 4 o'clock from Chestnut Hill. Mike Bray's Irish will take on the Boston College Eagles. All the action right here on WSBT Radio. Well, for the Fighting Irish hockey team, it is a home-and-home series with the Michigan Wolverines. Only 2 weekends left in the Big Ten regular season. The Irish will host Michigan Friday night at 7:35. I'll have the call on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, the Irish in Ann Arbor, to take on the Wolverines Sunday at 5:30 on Z94.3 FM. Last weekend, the Fighting Irish wrapped up the Big Ten regular season championship by beating Ohio State on Friday by a score of 2-1. So the Irish already have claimed one championship this year. In their inaugural year in the Big Ten Conference, they are the regular season champions, and there are still 4 games left in the conference season. And the best part of winning the regular season title, they're the number one seed in the Big Ten Tournament, and as long as they stay in the Big Ten Tournament, the Compton Family Ice Arena is where Notre Dame will play those Big Ten games, including the semifinal in a couple of weeks. Joining us right now is a member of the Irish's top line, sophomore left wing Cam Morrison out of Aurora, Ontario, a 2016 draft pick of the Colorado Avalanche, played in the USHL with Youngstown, and on Saturday against Ohio State, he scored a goal in his 70th career contest with the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Cam, it's Darren. Good to be with you. How are you this evening?
Good, Darren. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for your time. Let's begin with clinching that Big Ten regular season crown against Ohio State on Friday. How important was that achievement for you and your teammates?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely something special for us. Starting off the season, we didn't really know what to expect in the Big Ten, but we've done pretty well so far, and it was nice to win that, but we know there's a lot more for us.
When you think back to last year, you were a freshman on a team that made it to the Frozen Four. You had that great run in the NCAA tournament. You actually had 3 goals and an assist in 3 NCAA tournament games. You had a couple of huge goals in the matchup against Lowell in the Northeast Regional Final, a game that the Irish won in overtime on a goal by Andrew Ogilvy. How did that experience for you, going through those tournament games, prepare you and help you during your sophomore season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like those games helped me as a player as well as us as a team to mature and kind of expect what the road has for us. And I feel like, coming into this season, it gave us a lot more confidence to play with. And I think we've taken advantage of the experiences we've had last year and kind of played as more of a team, more of a mature team. So. I think it's really helped us out this year.
Cam Morrison, Notre Dame sophomore left wing, our guest on WSBT Radio. I think back to last year, hearing the stories about the University of Denver. They made the Frozen Four 2 years ago, and they were almost kind of satisfied getting to the Frozen Four and did not play well in the national semifinal, and they made it a goal not only to get back to the Frozen Four, but to win a championship, and unfortunately, they beat Notre Dame in the semifinals and then beat Duluth to win that national championship. Did you guys look at that national semifinal experience and use it as motivation during the offseason and leading up to this point, or is that something you left behind and you just kind of restarted with a new season?
I feel like it's kind of in the back of our minds. We never really talked about it or bring it up much because it was a tough game for us, but we know what we have to do to not let that happen again and make sure we're on the other side of that semifinal game and get us a chance at the national championship this year.
Cam, you were number 26 for Notre Dame. In case people listening that aren't maybe placing you, you're 26. You're a forward on the line with Jake Evans and Colin Tyson. When your game is going well, when you're playing at your best, what are the traits that come out in your game?
I feel like a big thing with me is speed. I feel like I'm really a north-south kind of guy, just up and down the wall, and Jake's a great centerman to play with. He loves when he has the puck, so a big part of my game is getting to the net for him, almost being an option to receive his passes. So yeah, it's awesome playing with him and Tyson. They make it easy for me, so I just need to do my job and play with speed and get to the net.
I was going to ask you about Jake because he is a captain. He is a senior, one of the older players on this hockey team. And just, he comes across, Cam, as a guy that's very calm and composed and never gets overly excited in any situation. How has he helped you develop as a college hockey player?
Last year I got the pleasure to play with him as well. And since freshman year I came in, he's kind of been almost like a mentor to me. Kind of taking me under his wing. So, yeah, he's been awesome helping me through my struggles and the adjustment to college. He was really there for me. And, yeah, like you said, he's a really calm, patient player and really skilled player with the puck as well. And he has great vision all over the ice. So, yeah, it's awesome playing with him.
Cam Morrison, sophomore left wing, the Irish hockey team ranked number one in the country, taking on Michigan Friday at the Compton. Joining us here on WSBT Radio, I think everybody felt like the defense core, Cam, was going to be a strength of this hockey team, and I think that has proved to be accurate. There's a lot of skill, and there's a lot of depth at that particular position. In fact, Coach Jackson has went with 7 defensemen pretty much the entire year. So you have to go up against these guys in practice. What comes to mind when you think about going up against this Notre Dame defense corps in practice?
It's definitely a pleasure going against them in practice and playing with them in games. They've definitely won us some games down the stretch there. So yeah, they've been great all year, and going against them in practice only gets us better too. They're really hard to play against, really skilled defense. So, yeah, I think they make us better players when we play against them in practice.
So when you run into Justin Wade in practice, what is that like?
It's not something I would recommend to anyone. It's not fun.
Cam Morrison, our guest here on WSBT Radio. How much confidence has Cale Morris given the entire hockey team with the season he has had between the pipes?
Yeah, he definitely gives us a lot of confidence to play with. We know when we need a big save from him, he'll be there. And he keeps us in all the games. He's always given us the chance to win. So it's nice having him behind us there.
2016 NHL Draft. Cam, you heard your name called. You were number pick 40 overall of the Colorado Avalanche. What do you remember about that experience?
Yeah, that was a great day, actually. It's kind of hard to describe it. It all happened so quick, it felt like. But, yeah, that was a good milestone for me. But I know out of the draft, you got to work harder and harder every day to achieve that final goal of becoming a professional hockey player.
Were the Avalanche a team that talked to you a lot, or was it a surprise?
Going into the draft, I really didn't have any expectations or really know which team had a lot of interest in me. So, yeah, I wasn't too surprised, but obviously it's a surprise when you see your name up there getting called. So, yeah, it was a great day, though.
Tell me about the sophomore class that you're a part of, guys like Cal Burke and Tori Dello and Andrew Peak. Is there a closeness with this group?
Yeah, we got a really tight-knit class. We're always together, always goofing around with each other. So, yeah, I feel like us eight have created a really special relationship, and we're always there for each other when we need help in school or hockey, anything. So, yeah, it's pretty special to see the relationships that we formed over our 2 years so far.
Cam, there's four games left in the regular season before the Big Ten tournament gets underway. You've accomplished your guys' goal of winning the regular season crowd. For the next four games, from the outside looking in, it doesn't appear there's a whole lot you guys can accomplish other than just winning hockey games and, of course, trying to improve as a group. Do you guys have kind of a checklist, things that you're looking to get better at, not only leading into the Big Ten tournament, but the upcoming NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I feel like we just got to stay to what's been working all year. Just stay focused on like the systems we've been implementing all year, and not get away from what's been working. So we can't really go into these last four games and just blow them off just because we've won the regular season. We got to play like it's an important game, and it is an important game with the national ranking still. So. Yeah, we're going in with the mindset of playing our hardest, playing our best.
You got the Michigan Wolverines coming up this weekend, and then wrap up with the Michigan State Spartans. And I know something Coach Jackson has talked about, even during the 16-game winning streak earlier this year, we have to get better at puck possession. Cam, this is a hockey community that's still learning about the game. I mean, this community has went nuts over hockey over the last 10 years. So if an average fan came up to you and said, why does Coach Jackson always talk about puck possession? That's a big part of our game. We need to get better. Why would you, or how would you describe to them how important it is for this team to have puck possession?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of skilled forwards and puck-moving defensemen, so I feel like if we possess the puck more, it gives us the ability to control the game and kind of dictate the flow of the play. So, yeah, when we have possession of the puck, it allows us to do what we want and not play on our heels.
Final question for you, Cam. You're an individual from Aurora, Ontario. You could have played Canadian juniors. You decided to play college hockey. Why was college hockey the choice for you?
I felt like the schooling as well with the athletics was a big part of it. I wanted to have something to fall back on after I was done playing hockey, and I feel like Notre Dame kind of offered the full package there with the academics as well as the elite athletics. So, yeah, it was almost a no-brainer for me, and I'm happy with my decision.
We're happy to have you, that's for sure. Cam Morrison, left wing for the Fighting Irish. The sophomore will be on the ice against the Michigan Wolverines Friday at the Compton. Standing room only tickets are available for Friday. Then the Irish go to Ann Arbor on Sunday. And then final two games, believe it or not, of the regular season, a week from Friday and Saturday against the Michigan State Spartans. Cam, greatly appreciate your time this evening. We look forward to seeing you at the Compton on Friday.
No problem. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. It's Cam Morrison, sophomore forward for the top-ranked Fighting Irish hockey team. Once again, you can hear the Irish on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, Friday at 7:35, pregame right around 7:20, as the top-ranked Irish will take on a Michigan Wolverine team that is third right now in the Big Ten Conference standings, ranked 18th in the country in the USCHO.com poll. The Irish beat Michigan in a home-and-home a few weeks ago by identical 2-1 scores, and they were just starting to play better when we played them back in January. And they've been a very solid team. Terrific offensively. Their defense has come around. Their goaltending has gotten better. And they need victories to get on the right side of the NCAA tournament bubble. And the best way for the Wolverines to get on the right side of the bubble is to beat the number one team in the country. That'll be the goal of the Wolverines when they take on the Fighting Irish Friday and Sunday. We appreciate Cam Morrison joining us here on WSBT Radio. Coming up next, Sean Stiers will rejoin me. We'll take care of some rapid fire, and he can offer some thoughts on Mishawaka and Wawasee, which is coming up at 7:30 tonight on 96.1 FM WSBT. Abby, thank you very much. 9 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We've got 6 minutes worth of rapid fire coming your way. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT.
All right, Darren, let me start you off with a Notre Dame basketball question. Fill in the blank on this one. Bonzi Colson tweeting a picture of himself today, jogging on a treadmill, is blank.
Well, it's obviously good news because there was no walking boot that I could see. Yeah. Looked like it was tennis shoes or basketball shoes, so that's a really, really good sign. So if it's February 14th and he's starting to run like that, I'm not a doctor, but it seems like he's on schedule, and maybe we might see him in Brooklyn for the ACC tournament. So nothing but positives when you look at that video.
Yeah, I'd say it's about the best news they've had in about the last 45, 46 days or so since he went out with the broken foot. And the timeline now, it's been about 6 weeks. They were originally saying he'd be out at least 8 weeks. So, I mean, if he's jogging, and we should probably emphasize it was a light jog, and he was doing it on a treadmill that basically kind of had this spaceship-like little contraption that was sort of supporting his midsection and everything. He wasn't going crazy, but it's a start. They got to start somewhere. And, I mean, maybe there's a good chance that he ends up in that senior day for extended time against Pittsburgh on February 28th. Who knows? So it's good news, though. It's good news to see him up and doing something.
At the very least, it has to give the rest of the team a boost, too.
Absolutely. I mean, they could really use 21 points and another 10.5 rebounds a game in the lineup right now. Yeah. So it's very good news. Okay, let's go back to some baseball. Do you buy or sell the Yu Darvish signing, making the Cubs the favorites to win the National League pennant?
I would say that the Dodgers and the Nationals are really the only two major threats that we see right now to the Cubs. It sure seems like the Cubs and Dodgers are on a collision course for a third straight NLCS showdown. So I really feel like Darvish taking Arrieta's spots, a little bit of a wash. It is a slight improvement with Darvish because he's more of a strikeout pitcher, and Arrieta's velocity has gone down each of the last 2 years, so that's concerning. But I think the big difference is going from Lackey to Chatwood in the rotation. I think that's where you're going to see huge improvement because Lackey was a home run giving up machine last year, just wasn't the same guy. Chatwood will keep the ball down, keep it in the ballpark, was really good away from Coors Field last year. So I really like the Chatwood signing. That'll make more of a difference than even Darvish. So, yes, I think they are the favorite to win the National League pennant.
Interesting. I wasn't sure which way you'd go. I'm selling it because you brought up the Darvish versus Arrieta and Chatwood versus Lackey, and I agree. It is an upgrade from Lackey to Chatwood. So that's good. But, I mean, there are still a lot of the same questions that they have this year that they had last year. Who's going to hit leadoff? How good is the outfield defense going to be? Are they going to have someone who can be a consistent leadoff hitter and defensive center fielder? Is mm-hmm. Kyle Schwarber going to upgrade his game after losing all this weight? I mean, so there are still some questions from a lineup standpoint and from a defensive standpoint. And then, again, we kind of talked about this earlier in the show. I know they like Morrow and everything, and he's been really good as a setup guy over the years. But there is a difference when you move that guy into the closer's role. They lose Wade Davis, who is great at the back end of the bullpen. So they don't know that he can close right now. So it's a sell for me. I would still give the Dodgers the edge over the Cubs right now.
And I would assume the Nationals will go all in since Bryce Harper's going to be a free agent after this year. If they have a hole, they're going to try to fix it at some point this year. So they're going to be very, very competitive with that rotation, but they're going to try to keep up with the Joneses with this being Harper's last year. I'm betting they go all in at the deadline.
Yep, absolutely right. All right, how much time do we have? Do we have time for any more?
We got 45 seconds. Let's do it.
Notre Dame football's Twitter account today. Did you see the Valentine's tweets?
I did not.
Miles Boykin. Which of these steals your heart? Miles Boykin. I would run miles for you. Julian Love. All you need is love. Nick Wisher. I wish you a happy Valentine's Day. Or Justin Yoon. I get a kick out of Yoon.
I'll go with Julian Love. That's a good song.
Puns galore. I know. It's not the Simpsons when little Ralphie gave Lisa the I choose you. So I was disappointed there was no Ian book, you know, like who wrote the book of love.
Ooh,
or anything like that.
Very
but
nice.
I like the Julian all you need is love as well. So they got creative with their Twitter for Valentine's Day. I liked it.
All right, 6:56 at WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We have about 40 seconds left. Sean, how about a quick preview? Mishawaka Wawasee tonight.
Well, as I was saying earlier, it's been about a week since the Cavemen played. They're 10-7, though, overall. Kind of heading into the stretch drive. Wawasee is 5-14. They lost last night to Westview, the second-ranked team in 2A. So Cavemen looking for a win and another home game against John Glenn on Friday.
Very good. Have a great call tonight.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. CBS Sports coming up next on your home of the Fighting Irish. It's Notre Dame at Boston College Saturday at 4 o'clock on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.